Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC. With me for our conversation today is Democratic State Representative Josh Elliott of Hamden, who has recently announced that he is running for governor in the gubernatorial race 2026 in Connecticut, which means that he could face Governor Lamont in a primary. Governor Lamont has said that he'll take some time and announce his decisions for 2026 in the fall, whether he will run for a third term or not. We have plenty to talk about on policy and what the governor might or might not do. Josh, welcome to the show. Welcome.
It's a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You know, I was looking on social media. You had made a lot of news in the last 2 weeks, really, with your campaign very early on. And I saw a lot of people commenting on some of the news articles. Who? So I think that we should start with that question first. For people who don't know who you are outside of maybe greater New Haven or maybe even parts of Fairfield County where you kind of reach down in that area, but for other people across the state, who is Josh Elliott?
Sure. So I grew up in Connecticut. I actually grew up in Guilford, went to high school in Hamden, left for years in New York, lived in Virginia for a couple of years, but I came back about 16, 17 years ago and ended up at law school, Quinnipiac Law. And then after I graduated, opened up a business in Shelton. But it was really then when Bernie Sanders announced that I got active and engaged in Connecticut politics. So I was what would be considered a super volunteer. I knocked doors in New Hampshire, I knocked doors in Massachusetts, and I organized here in our state. And then when the campaign ended, there was this vacuum of energy. What do we do? We're really frustrated that our guy lost. And the Working Families Party approached me, asked me if I would primary the Speaker of the House. And I didn't really know anything about local or statewide politics at that point, so I just did some research. And a few weeks later, ended up throwing my hat in the ring. And a couple weeks after that, the Speaker decided not to run again. So I effectively pushed him out of the race. And the reason I did this was because we were really slow on minimum wage. We were really slow on paid family medical leave. We were really slow on legalizing the recreational use of cannabis. And these are things that were really important to me. So I end up winning my primary, end up winning my general election. And then over the last 9 years is how long I've been elected. I end up starting the Progressive Caucus. I started the Tax Equity Caucus. I chair the Higher Education Committee. And now, as we speak, I am the chair of screening for the Speaker of the House, Deputy Speaker, and I am caucus co-chair. So hold a couple of titles. Yeah, I came in as a lefty and my elbows were out. And that I learned very, very quickly that the way that you actually get stuff done is by working with everybody. You got to work with the moderate Democrats. You got to work with the Republicans. And I've spent a lot of time really building strong relationships within the caucus and outside of the caucus because this work is very important to me. And I'm not just trying to make noise. I'm actually trying to pass policy. And the only way you do that is by working with everybody. And here we are. I have some frustrations with our current governor, and I think that there's significantly more that our state can and should be doing.
Well, that brings us to now. You're running for governor in 2026, first Democrat to announce any plans for 2026. Let me ask you this. Do you think that Governor Lamont will be running?
If I had to give a percentage, I'd say 80%. This is based on the fact that he's been making calls to state central members. These are the folk in every Senate district. There's 2 per Senate district that essentially represent the party. They're sort of the backbone of the party. And so the governor's been calling them and basically saying, hey, how do you think we're doing in our state? Short conversations to sort of cheerlead for our state. And then he's also been talking with Democratic town committee chairs, and Democratic town committees are in every single town, and they are basically the local elected officials that hold the keys for who becomes endorsed at the town level, state level, and federal level. So he's been talking with the chairs, the most powerful people in every town, to do the same thing, to basically get a sense, get a gauge of where folk are at. And you don't do that work unless you are seriously contemplating a run. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds of conversations I have been having as well. And of course I am running. And so it would surprise me greatly were he to be doing these check-ins and not be running.
Let me ask you this. So let's say that the two of you are running, and who knows, maybe other Democrats will get into the race as well. It's still very early on. But let's say it's the two of you. He has 8 years of name recognition, and before that, two campaigns, and now this would be his third if he decides to go for this. And it's your first go-around as far as campaigning for governor. How would you approach a run-up to a primary against incumbent Governor Lamont?
There are a few concrete components to this race. The first is going to be the lead-up to the May convention. And the folk that go to this May convention are really, in a sense, the political insiders. And what I will say is that people that end up there don't necessarily conceive of themselves as political insiders. But it's around 22 or so hundred people from around the state. Generally, these are people that are on the Democratic town committees. And the reason that May convention is so important is because they're the ones who determine who the line A or the endorsed candidate is. And a lot of our fight right now is really leading up to that convention. So, yes, we're going to be doing a lot of social media. We're going to be doing press to let the general public know who we are. But at the same time, a lot of the individual conversations are going to be with people that we know are either going to be at the convention or are very close to the convention, because our goal is to get line A, is to win over the party, because we believe that we're the party of ideas and that we should be doing significantly more to show the public what we stand for and who we stand for. And right now, I think there's a reason that Democrats are generally unpopular, and that's because we just have a hard time clearly communicating what it is that we want to do. And my goal through this campaign is to really explain the things that Connecticut is weak on, how we could improve on those things, and what the vision is going to be looking like going forward.
Governor Lamont has seemed to be more moderate on a number of issues more recently, especially ones that seem to cause division in Connecticut. You look at the striking workers bill, EVs, going farther back, talking about tolls. More recently, the United States, this isn't just Connecticut, but the United States has seen among the Democratic Party a shift toward progressive politics. Why do you think that is?
Let's look at what happened last year. We lost two Democrats, friends of mine, who were slightly more moderate, and we picked up six Democrats, and these are seats that flipped. And those seats that we flipped were all highly progressive candidates, folks that really align with the things that I'm talking about. So that's just really to bolster your point, is that we are seeing a more leftward shift. It's interesting, when I first got elected, we were 79 Democrats and 72 Republicans in the House. And there was this feeling from the conservative folk around our state that this was the beginning of the end of a Democratic majority. And there was a lot of heckling my candidacy and how I came in and primarying the speaker from the left. And then, of course, what we saw over the last 10 years is that we have continued to gain numbers to a point where we're now 102. We have a supermajority in the House. And I think that there's this consistent desire to see Connecticut do more for the working class and for the middle class as well. And one thing that I've been frustrated by is the fact that while, yes, we have those numbers, the 102 Democrats that are in the House, on any given issue, about 20 are slightly more moderate and cautious about the things that we want to do. And because we have a governor who is also more moderate, it means that we are really hamstrung. And why have things changed across the board? I think some of it is certainly over the last 5 years with the pandemic, people coming in from the cities. We have really good quality of life here. And as much as people like to kvetch about the taxes here, we still have lower taxes than Massachusetts. We still have lower taxes than New York. We still have lower taxes than Pennsylvania, New Jersey. And so for those reasons, we're still competitive in that way. I would say there's still quite a bit of room for us to make some adjustments to our tax code, something that I'm sure you and I will talk about shortly. But I think that what we see is businesses come and go based off quality of life, because they know that the people that work for these businesses want to be in a place with strong social safety nets, with a strong culture that works for the middle class, that protects people's wages, keeps people healthy. And I think that we have a pretty good reputation, not just in the Northeast, but also around the country. I think a big part of being governor is at the same time being cheerleader, but you also need to focus on the things that you could do better too, or else you aren't going to improve. You aren't going to create a society that is more enticing to young folk, because that's one thing that I do hear and think about often is how do we keep people here after they graduate? How do we keep young families? How do we keep on growing that base?
I'm Morgan Cunningham. If you're just joining us on Face Connecticut, he is Democratic State Representative Josh Elliott of Hamden, who has announced recently he's running for governor in 2026. We're talking about that, and we'll get to some of the issues and where he stands on them in a moment. I do want to go back to, as you mentioned, last year, 2024, the presidential election. We had 56% Democrat vote for Harris, 41%, almost 42% vote Republican for Trump, 3% roughly other. And of all of those voters, obviously the most extreme on one side, you'd have the progressives, and then you'd have the MAGAs on the other to counter that. And one thing that Governor Lamont has often said, and many politicians say this, I'll also point out, he wants to be a governor for all of Connecticut, right? That includes some of the progressive values, that includes some of the MAGA and everybody and everything in between. How would you be a governor for all of Connecticut?
I think that you do it by listening. First, there are certain things that I want to accomplish with this role. It is not simply about being governor. It's about seeing the office of governor as a way to accomplish legislative policy agendas. And so I'm being very clear about what those things are. And you can also look to my last 10 years of the bills that I've co-introduced, of the bills I've co-sponsored. So there's no question about what I'm trying to accomplish. What I would say is that we do a very good job at the Capitol, and this may be a surprise to folk, but we bring Republicans into basically every conversation. Now, that's not always expressed on the floor. It's not always expressed in public. But what we find in the majority party is that ideas are made better by conflicting opinions. And that is how you ensure that you don't have oversteps or oversight. You can actually really hone in on what people's issues are with what you're talking about, and you can try to find a nice balance. If it were true that we are always just combative, the Republicans do have an incredible amount of power. Every individual legislator has an incredible amount of power, and that is the power of the filibuster, which we've, for now, protected in Connecticut. And what that means is that if there's anything so toxic to a Republican or the party, they could talk for 6, 8, or 10 hours. But the fact is that there are things that Republicans disagree with, but because they've been in the room, they allow these things to go through by not filibustering. So when we talk about what does it mean to be the governor for all of Connecticut, it means that you're listening. It doesn't mean that you stop holding on to your deeply held beliefs. It doesn't mean you stop fighting for what you believe in, but it does mean you leave room to listen, to allow yourself to change your mind, to allow yourself to be wrong, and to allow yourself other people's ideas to influence your thinking.
Let's talk about some of the issues and where you stand on them. We've kind of hinted at some of them in the last 14 minutes or so, but in our final 10 minutes, let's talk about some of the issues. Taxes. You have talked about, and people who are critical of you already have talked about, your stance on taxes. What are they?
My stance is this. Over the last 10 years, we put out 3 studies of the tax incidence reports. What these studies show is that the more money that you make in Connecticut, the less you pay as a percentage of your income to state and local taxes. The reason for this is that Connecticut is generally more reliant on the property tax and the sales tax and under-reliant on the income tax than other states. And the reason this is bad is that the property tax and the sales tax are highly regressive taxes, meaning that since they're not connected to your income, they hit you harder the less money you make. And yes, it is true that we have a progressive income tax structure, but it is not nearly progressive enough to offset how bad the other taxes are. And so what these studies show is that if you are in the top 4,500 income earners in our state, you're going to pay between 7 to 9% of your income to state and local taxes. And if you're in the bottom 40 to 50% of our state, you're going to be paying at least 20% of your income to state and local taxes. So we are in Connecticut cementing extreme wealth while we are making it harder for the working poor to elevate themselves into the middle class. And we're making it harder for the middle class to stay there and themselves elevate themselves up too. And my belief is that's a big, big problem if what we want as a state is equal opportunity for people to have dignified and respectable lives. We are extremely expensive, but not expensive for the wealthy. We're expensive for the middle class. And when we look at, and this is always the concern, well, if you tax the wealthy, they'll leave. There are multiple long-term studies that show that people do not make their decisions on where to live based on the taxes of that state. Now, it may be number 12 or 13 or 14 of their list of hierarchy, but it's ultimately, where's the job opportunity? Where is family? Where are friends? What's the culture like? It's not because of taxes. And so there's this incredible fear that we're trying to do the right thing, and because of doing the right thing, there's deleterious effects. But what I would propose is that it's a boogeyman. It's not real. It's not shown up in any data anywhere. And yes, you can, through anecdotal evidence, put a person who leaves or some people who leave. But the fact is, people have been leaving Connecticut to live in Florida for a very long time. And that's cherry-picked information, because you don't look at the times that the ultra-wealthy moved to Boston, moved to New York City. And the fact is that we are a hub here in the Northeast of infrastructure. We're a hub of education. We're a hub of transportation. We're a hub of wealth. And it's really, really hard for people to maintain that wealth if they were to leave that. And my belief is that as long as we continue to invest in our infrastructure and we have Connecticut be one of the best places to live, that is what's going to bring people here.
And when we talk about taxes, it's not necessarily just personal income taxes, but also businesses as well. And there's also the common threat that businesses will leave if their taxes increase. We have even seen some businesses more recently say that they want to go to Boston because there's better technology there, or other companies that are concerned about taxes in Connecticut. What would you say to business owners, small, medium, even larger corporations, some of the biggest corporations in Connecticut, what would you say to them about their expenses and their taxes at this early juncture in your campaign?
I think you sort of hit the nail on the head that businesses will leave because they want to go where there's a really strong pipeline for employees and a really educated base for them to hire from. And so we have universities like Quinnipiac and Yale, which I'm nearby, but we're really, really strong in that field. But where we're not strong is on retention of people that are recently graduating. So what we need to do is be ensuring that we have fiscal reasons for people to stay, that we have cultural reasons for people to stay, that we have a social safety net so people can open up a new business, and were they to fail, they wouldn't be destitute. There are things that we should be investing in that would keep businesses here. I think that there's always a focus on taxes, but to me, if you build it, they will come. It is not tax related. It is culturally related.
What is Connecticut's identity? Okay, is it pizza? Is it the shoreline? Is it something else? Because you think about Nashville, for example, and they have music. New York City has Broadway. They have all these other things going on. Boston has the Red Sox, for example. Okay, what does Connecticut have that you could market? Because Governor Lamont has been very adamant about tourism and marketing Connecticut. But what is your message?
I think that there's been this frenetic fight for identity. And I'm so much less worried about projecting identity and so much more concerned about being who we want to be. And so whether it's the state of EB or the state of pizza or the state of basketball, I think that sort of, to me, misses the point. I think that if we invest and we have small business owners be able to grow something, that identity will mature outside of something that Connecticut's estate pushes. I think that's a mistake to try to push that. I will say that we have some incredible small towns along the river. We have incredible towns in the Northwest and the Northeast corners that people come from out of state to spend a day, whether it's Mystic or whether it's Essex or whether it's Litchfield County. I mean, there's nothing that the state needs to do to make these towns more attractive. They are gorgeous. People are coming. And could we impress on that with ads that go out of state to show how beautiful it is? Sure, we could, and we do. But I think trying to create an identity is a mistake. The identity is just that we invest in ourselves, we take care of our people. That, to me, is, I think, what ends up being the most attractive, the way we take care of ourselves.
I guess one of my final thoughts, and we'll have to have another conversation down the line, Josh. He is Democratic gubernatorial candidate for 2026, Josh Elliott of Hamden, state representative and part of the Capitol's Progressive Caucus. But my question to you, we've talked a lot about Democratic Governor Ned Lamont, what he might or might not do. What about the Republican side? You have Westport First Select Woman Jen Tooker, New Britain's outgoing mayor Aaron Stewart, who has yet to decide or commit 100% to running, but she's exploring it. How are you following the Republican side, and do you think that they might get momentum here as well? Aaron Stewart, in particular, has gotten a lot of attention.
Aaron Stewart is a well-known figure among Democratic politicians, herself as being moderate on gun regulation. She's positioned herself as being moderate on abortion regulation. Two of the things that, when you think to yourself, what's the difference between Democrats and Republicans, those are the two big things. So because she's positioned herself that way, she's made herself out to be this very sort of, and when I say scary, not scary as a person, scary because she could have a very strong candidacy, because she sort of neutralizes the Democrats' strength. At the same time, what she's doing is she's sort of wrapping herself in MAGA to win that primary, because what she saw last cycle is the folks that were seen as more moderate got absolutely demolished at their convention. And then you had the far right, and then they got demolished in the public. And so that's why I think that people are really looking at Aaron Stewart and seeing what's happening. She's doing a good job raising the funds. But the fact is, if she's raising wrapping herself in MAGA, she's going to have to figure out how to play that part in public. Which side is she playing to? Then you have Ryan Fazio down in Greenwich, who I think is smart. I think he's charming. I think he's charismatic. We agree on not a whole lot. I think he's also somebody who could potentially get that nomination. I think ultimately when it comes down to it, this is going to be a contest of ideas. Obviously, myself, Ryan, Aaron have the benefit of, I would say, relative youth. I mean, I'm 40, so I'm not young in a global perspective, but I'm certainly young in a political perspective. And so that is something that will be on the sidelines conversationally, not something that I'm going to push or particularly care about. But we have some up-and-coming stars in the Republican Party that I think that we should be taking seriously, and we should be really selling our ideas as a Democratic Party. One thing that I find frustrating from the left, from the progressive movement, from Democrats generally, is this idea that we come to the public with our ideas and we come at it as though we are right, therefore you have to believe us. I don't care how right we think we are. Every good idea that we have, we should be selling it. We should be selling it as we're pushing it, selling it as we're passing it, and selling it once it becomes law. Because people need to know what we've done. I think paid family medical leave is a prime example. This is something that affects millions of people, but it's underused because people don't even realize that it exists and how strong it is. Of course, it could be made stronger. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars sitting there for people to use in the case that somebody in their family is sick, in the case that they have a newborn. And I do think that we need to be pushing this more. But that's one thing I would like to see more from the Democratic Party, of really being proud of the things that we're championing, but also being patient with people even when they're not with us, and then listening to people and explaining why we think these things are good for Connecticut.
Josh, I think we'll have to have some more conversations as the race takes shape and heading to next May and next summer, which is hard to imagine. We're thinking a year out, but that's what we're doing. Thanks for coming on Face Connecticut. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. I will always be available to you.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.